Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Trump storms to power, the greatest comeback in US political history. He's back. Trump season two and American dread. Newspapers around the world this morning react to Donald Trump's historic US election victory and his Democratic opponent Kamala Harris last night addressed a crowd at Howard University in Washington where she conceded the election to Donald Trump. Let's hear some of what she said.
My heart is full today. My heart is full today. Full of gratitude for the trust you have placed in me, full of love for our country, and full of resolve. Now I know folks are feeling and experiencing a range of emotions right now. I get it. But we must accept the results of this election. Earlier today, I spoke with President-elect Trump and congratulated him on his victory. I also told him that we will help him and his team with their transition. While I concede this election, I do not concede the fight that fueled this campaign. The fight for our freedom will take hard work, but like I always say, we like hard work. Hard work is good work. Hard work can be joyful work. And the fight for our country is always worth it. It is always worth it.
Let's get the latest from the United States and Terry Sheridan, news director at WSHU Public Radio in New York, joins us now. Terry, thanks for being with us today. We heard Kamala Harris there. We're going to hear from President Joe Biden, aren't we, later on?
Yes, he's expected to make some remarks, and it'll probably be similar to what you just heard from Kamala Harris, conceding the election and pledging cooperation.
And his plan is to invite Donald Trump into the White House, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, it's until Donald Trump's transition to Joe Biden or Joe Biden's transition from Donald Trump, that was a regular part of the transition of power in which the president would welcome in the president-elect. There would be a photo op and then there would be discussions about, well, here's what's going on in the past 4 years that you need to know about now.
And the focus, of course, will be on Donald Trump. He has to assemble this huge 4,000-strong transition team, but also decide who's going to be part of his administration. Now, we would expect him to be better prepared for this time round. What are you hearing in terms of who's going to be in there?
Well, again, right now there's just the, I'm going to call them the usual candidates from the past year. You know that Robert Kennedy Jr. is going to be in there in some way, shape or form, overseeing some of the health departments. We don't know exactly what role. Elon Musk is going to be somehow involved. That has been said. And then it'll probably be the political class from, the Project 2025 people, the Heritage Foundation, who will go in and staff the administration. It's not known, again, when Donald Trump took over in 2016, there were people who went in, Republicans who went in with him, and they were supposed to be the guardrails. And they were the ones who found out that there were no guardrails, and they did as best as they can. I'm talking about General John Kelly and people of that sort. So who knows who he's going to put in and put into key positions in both his cabinet and also in the ambassadorships around the world.
Mm-hmm. On the Democrat side, then, has the blame game begun and what does it look like?
Well, the blame game or the analysis is that, one, Kamala didn't have enough time. Kamala Harris only had 120 days to get up and get going. Part of it is, were Americans not willing to elect a woman and not willing to elect a woman of color? But it seems that the blame game is that the Democrats did not reach out to people in their core constituency who went over and voted for Trump, talking about Latinos, talking about the black working class, talking about people who are more worried about immigration and inflation as opposed to other, I guess, existential questions for Americans. So they went to Trump, sort of a new coalition in which Trump picked off people, so to speak, from, the Latino population, the Muslim population, and the black working class to come into the Republican tent.
Mm-hmm. There's also the accusation that the Democrats didn't deal with the problem of Joe Biden quickly enough, that that decision should have been made much sooner to give Kamala Harris a better chance.
Yeah, and that was also part of it, too. Kamala Harris was vice president for the past 4 years. She, while vice president, has very limited power, basically there in position in case anything happens to the president. She was tied to his policies for the past 4 years, which were unpopular. A poll that came out, an exit poll on Tuesday, showed that only about 32-33% of Americans thought that Joe Biden was doing a good job. That had to have an effect on Kamala Harris's mm-hmm. performance.
She was given the opportunity on the chat show The View to say what she would do differently over the last 4 years of the Joe Biden presidency. And she paused for a moment and she said, I can't think that there's anything that I would change. Now, there are some who say that it was that moment that played a big part in the result of this election.
Yeah, you could say that. I mean, again, because, again, Joe Biden is unpopular. Some of his policies regarding immigration, he was viewed, even though he brought down inflation, he was viewed as being responsible for the inflation that we saw early in his administration. And for Kamala Harris to say that she wouldn't do anything different, if people were not happy with Joe Biden, they definitely weren't going to go over and vote for Kamala Harris.
Terry, thank you very much as always. Terry Sheridan there joining us from the United States. Let's get more reaction now to Donald Trump's victory. I'm joined by Greg Swenson, Chairman of Republicans Overseas, and TJ Molloy from Democrats Abroad Ireland. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Now, I'll start with you, Greg. Donald Trump, we know he's putting together this huge transition team that he needs. But when it comes to his permanent team, it seems from what he has said publicly that both Elon Musk and RFK Jr. are two names that are figuring prominently. And there are those who are watching this who have concerns about that. Do you think that they're right to be worried?
Well, I think that the opponents, the Democrats, will of course, be... have some concerns or at least voice their anger. And I think there's just a lot of that in the last 2 days. So, look, I mean, you know, RFK is a Democrat and he's a reform Democrat, but he will have something to do with, I would imagine, nutrition. It seems to be one of his key things. Obviously, as Trump said, he won't have anything to do with the energy sector. And then on Elon, I mean, you know, he's a real visionary. I imagine he'll be doing something in terms of, you know, reducing the federal bureaucracy or sort of government efficiency. I'm not sure it will be a cabinet role because he's just busy, right? I don't imagine he has a ton mm-hmm. of time. And also he's got, you know, it's because of his business investments and his portfolio of assets, I think it would be really difficult for him to unwind a lot of that.
Okay, so TJ, for you, when you hear that RFK, Donald Trump said during that victory speech he made midway through the count the other night, was going to be given free rein in health, we know Elon Musk is going to be very involved. How concerned are you?
Yeah, I just think an anti-vaxxer being involved in our national health policy is a pretty bad idea. I think just about everyone would agree with that. RFK has been denounced by pretty much everyone who knows him for the most part. But anyway, it's he's sure to have a position, I'm sure. Elon Musk would have a pretty big problem passing a background check. It looks like the Trump administration is going to be doing away with a lot of the safeguards we have in place.
But because of the Republican success in this election, not only taking the presidency, but likely the House and the Senate as well, there's not much that you can do about any of these things.
Yeah, very little can be done. I mean, he's the president, the executive, but the guardrails are off. They're gone. This is not 2016.
Yeah, a former EU trade commissioner said that the adults in the room seem to be gone, Greg, that he's surrounded by a new kind of MAGA supporter. Do you agree that the guardrails are gone and there is going to be little or no handbrake on Donald Trump this time round?
No, I mean, I think it'll be the opposite. I mean, you know, political opponents being investigated by the weapons of government. I think that's something that we've experienced quite a bit in the last few years, to say the least. So starting with Donald Trump himself. So I think, you know, look, I think after the kind of weaponization of the justice system in the last few years, I would hope there's a rejection of that.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about tariffs, because we know there are concerns even expressed as recently as this morning by the aluminium and the car industry here in Europe about impending tariffs that Donald Trump has said he's going to put on products arriving into the United States. But shouldn't the United States, Greg, be worried too about tariffs? Because Chinese companies supply nearly 40% of the materials for batteries, for example, that go into Tesla's cars. So the likes of Elon Musk wouldn't like, surely, to see tariffs slapped on imports either.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think the tariff talk has to be dialed down a little bit. I think it's useful in negotiating. It's useful, like it was with Remain in Mexico, the policy that kept illegal migrants in Mexico to apply for asylum. I mean, I think that was a useful moment for tariffs, just in negotiations. But I think overdoing it is overkill. Look, the tariffs on China were kept, for the most part, were kept by the Biden administration. So those were, I thought, efficient and also quite right to execute, because it wasn't free and fair trade. But yeah, it's just, I think that the blanket across the board tariffs is a mistake.
Mm-hmm. And the commitment was that we introduce these tariffs and the end result is that it brings down inflation in America. Do you agree with Donald Trump on that, Greg?
I think that's debatable. I think the tariffs he used in his first term, and, you know, they were sort of temporary and targeted in many respects. I think, again, blanket tariffs ultimately is inflationary because it raises prices on the consumer. So I think what he's trying to argue is any inflation from tariffs would be offset by liberating the supply side and reducing inflation by more productivity, mm-hmm. which is something that, you know, that worked in his first term. And we had growth and very impressive wage growth without inflation. So it's worked before. Well, yeah. I hope it works again.
So TJ, just listening to Greg there saying that the talk of tariffs needs to be dialed down. And we hear a lot of this around what Donald Trump says during his campaigns, that really you need to stop taking him so seriously. And if you look back on the last couple of weeks, did the Democrats spend too much time taking Donald Trump's sometimes outlandish comments seriously, where his own supporters understood that they're not a prelude to policy. You don't need to take them too seriously. And perhaps now, looking back, the Democrats wasted too much time fighting Donald Trump and what he says.
Yeah, it's a strange argument. I don't you don't want your candidate to be taken seriously. It's a, you know, which is pretty silly, really. I take him seriously. I think there's going to be across the board tariffs. Now, is that going to be tweaked in some way? I don't know.
Can we come back, though, to the campaign? And my question is, did the Democrats waste time calling Donald Trump out as a fascist, warning about what he'll do, while all the while we see now voters were worried about what was in their wallet?
Yeah, it's the economy, stupid. We've said it over and over. It's the economy is, it was key there. We had a lot of inflation, just as we did here in Ireland. And prices, you know, inflation has largely been beat, but prices obviously have not come down. So, you know, it's a big pocketbook issue. This seems to be what Donald Trump won on. I think we're going to see a fascistic agenda going forward. The Justice Department is going to be brought, and the FBI is going to be brought under direct rule from the White House, from mm-hmm. what we understand. So the guardrails are gone. You know, they're gone. And to say that the Senate is in any way, shape or form, if Democrats cannot gain the House, it's going to be 2 years of a Trump, you know, monarchy, for lack of a better term, okay. with a monarchist Supreme Court. That's gone as well. There's no guardrails.
So Greg, the election was about the money in people's pockets. But, you know, TJ is saying we can't forget that Donald Trump is a danger.
It's hysterical because he was president for 4 years. So it's not like, you know, we haven't seen this movie before. Secondly, it's funny coming from the Democrats when they just said 4 years of weaponizing the justice system and trying to put their political opponents in prison, and then using the FBI and the CIA to coordinate and collude with their campaigns and with the social media companies to censor. So I think bringing in an anti-censorship guy like Elon Musk is fantastic. We need to end that. And so the party of the Democrats used to be the defenders of free speech. So it's troubling to see that they're so worried about an Elon Musk or RFK Jr. And I think that a generation ago, they would have embraced that, both of those guys.
Mm-hmm. Do you accept the description of RFK Jr. as an anti-vaxxer?
Sure, I do. Yeah, but I think hopefully he'll be more involved in nutrition, which is why the woman vote moved toward Trump by a point. You know, they thought they were going to have a 16-point advantage with women. They ended up with 8.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter what you eat, Greg, if you end up with polio because you haven't taken the vaccines that have been proven to work.
Yeah, no, it's a relevant discussion. But I think the reason he got a lot of support and the women, especially married women, is because they were concerned with the vax mandates during COVID. I mean, that's clearly what drove the needle here. The Democrats ended up being the party of lockdowns and the party of mandates, and that's really annoyed people on both sides of the Atlantic. So I think we have to take it seriously. Let's listen. I mean, people were censoring any discussion about vax mandates. Yeah. It was censored. That's just so un-American.
Yeah, but you can accept that a lot of damage was done during COVID. If that's your position, that's fine. But you have to take an awful lot more. If you take RFK and his positions, you have to accept an awful lot more with his anti-vax agenda.
I don't think there'll be RFK Jr. single-handedly deciding what healthcare.
That's what Donald Trump said the other night. Everything to do with healthcare.
Look at the actual context of that. At a campaign rally or at a closing statement, I'm going to let RFK Jr. go wild. Come on.
But again, what we're saying here and what you're saying to me is do not take the president-elect seriously. Do not take him at his word.
No, I'm saying take campaign statements with some understanding that it's a campaign discussion. I mean, Trump exaggerates. He likes to talk. He likes to speak freely. That's not policy. That's not written policy. So I would not let Trump derangement syndrome start to really color people again.
Okay. Do you accept that, TJ, that actually you shouldn't really listen to him?
Not at all. I mean, you know, they talk about Democrats colluding with social media companies. Has Greg been on Twitter the last month? it was Trump Central the entire time. And a lot of people are censored on Twitter every day. Elon Musk is a free speech advocate for Elon Musk. And if it's you disagree with him, you'll quickly find yourself not on Twitter anymore or being downgraded on it. And let's be clear, on January 6th, what happened? People stopped Donald Trump. They would have done the coup. If he could have done the coup on January 6th, gotten false electors down there, gotten Mike Pence to certify the results, they would have done it. Like, let's be clear. They would have done everything they wanted to do if they could have. But we were able to some smarter heads or cooler heads prevailed and institutions held. That's gone.
All right.
We don't have the
listen.
There's going to be nobody within the administration to safeguard our institutions and our democratic norms.
Well,
that's gone. We'll see what happens in the next 2 years.
Well, let's see what happens indeed. TJ Molloy and Greg Swenson, thank you both for your time.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.